Ecclesiastes chapter 9 gets us into this period of time in this particular writing. Solomon is just drawing conclusions. And we've seen already how so many of the conclusions that he writes for us here are ones that are helpful and ones that we can make applications from. And just very briefly, some things that he has said in the early part of this writing is that he's reflected on all of these things that he's just talked about. Here's some things I've concluded. You know, that all share a common destiny, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean. You know, we all have a common destiny, he says. People from different ways of life, different views of life, we're all still going to die, really, is some of the points that he comes to. He said that there is evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. And he kind of gives a view of some things that just happen in life. In verse 7, he made the point in a more positive tone. He says, so go and eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with joyful heart, for it is now that God favors what you do. And we've seen him say something similar to that in other chapters prior, as he has drawn some brief conclusions before, that there's nothing wrong with enjoying the things that our hands have worked for, but still it's all in view and has to be tempered with the fact that we're all going to die. And that life can't be centered on those things. In verse 10, which is about where we got to on Sunday, we started on verse 10. He says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave where you are going, there is neither working nor planning, nor knowledge nor wisdom. I don't know how many times in this writing that Solomon has said something about the fact that we're going to die. And I don't think that he particularly takes joy in the fact of saying that we're all going to die, but it is just that kind of a fact. And even if we have things in this life to enjoy, which we should enjoy, you have to take that in perspective that you're still going to die. And when you get busy about doing things, just do it right. You know, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. If you're going to do something, do it with some gusto and do it in such a way where it's done right. There were some comments that was made Sunday regarding that point right there about how we see that there are others who did things with all of their might. When David was building the temple, when David didn't build the temple, when he was making preparations for the building of the temple, 1 Chronicles chapter 29, David says that he says that I have done my all. I have given my all to put things in place for the building of the temple. Whether it was getting the silver together or the gold or the timber or whatever it was. He didn't hold anything back. He did it with every being, every fiber that he had to get it done. In the New Testament, in Colossians chapter 3, in verse 23. I don't remember if we looked at that or not. Colossians 3, 23. The Apostle Paul says something there on a similar thought and tone. Colossians 3, verse 23, and whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord, not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. Again, it's this idea. I mean, if you're going to do something, do it right. You know, I've told you some stories about I told you too many stories about growing up and how I had to be reminded many, many, many times about some things that I should do or not do. And I don't know how many times my dad told me, if you want to do something, just do it right. And his point more often was, if you're not going to do it right, just get out of the way and let me do it. You know, I mean, if you're not going to do it right, then don't even bother. Don't make a mess. And every time I read this passage in Colossians 3, I think about that. I used to hate it when he would tell me that. But I think I'm understanding more and more why he was saying that and why I would wind up saying the same things to my girls. If you're not going to do it right, then don't even bother. I mean, you can do better than this. If you're going to do it, just do it right. And, you know, if you think of some things in vain of the idea of, you know, I'm going to do it right as the Lord will want me to do it, that kind of changes things. It changes the perspective of how we look at some things and how we even would do some. All right, what are some of your thoughts? As we think about it here in verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. What are some thoughts that come to your mind? Some comments maybe you would make?
Well, there's that's something that all of us can relate to on one level or another, that we're not, our boss, if we have someone above us that's overseeing our work or something, he's not there all the time. And there may be occasions where he's not there at all.
Sure.
For a long period of time. But you still do your work just as though, because you're not doing it for your boss, you're doing it unto God.
That's right.
So that means whatever
you do. It's a reminder of who we are.
It is. Because ultimately, you're either, who are you seeking approval from? If it's God, then you're going to do your work with the absolute utmost excellence that you can.
Sure.
Because what would we do if we were doing something for God?
Sure.
If we were making a birdhouse for God, it would be a really good birdhouse.
I mean, that really changes our perspective to some things. If we think about whatever we're doing, what if we were doing this for God in His presence, how we would go about doing it, wouldn't that kind of like raise the bar a little bit, so to speak?
What comes to my mind, Jesus was a carpenter, whatever that exactly meant in his day. I can't imagine that his work would have been sloppy or just kind of halfway done, whatever it was.
Yeah, or that he worked half the day and expected to get paid for all.
Right.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I wish I did a better job at that. Yeah, good point. It is. All right, look on here a little bit more what he says. Reading on verse 11, I have seen everything under the sun. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all. Interesting passage. It's kind of like a proverb, as we said before. In particular, in the latter part of Ecclesiastes, it's almost as though he is writing to us little proverbs, some just short points that there's applications that can be made. As we kind of work into verse 11 right here, the race is not to the swift. What does it mean? I thought the race was all about being the fastest. Is the fastest runner always the one that wins?
Not the one who gets across the finish line first.
Wins. And that may not be the fastest runner. Because sometimes there are things that happen. It's kind of like watching a car race. And for those of us who like watching car races, the fastest car doesn't always win. There's a whole lot of other things to be considered. And Solomon knew something about NASCAR long ago because he said the race is not always to the swift. It's not always the fastest that wins. Or the
just ran the tortoise in the air.
There you go. Or the battle to the strong. Sometimes it's the strong who lose. Well, that doesn't seem right. Well, he's not saying it's right. He's saying here's what happens. Like sometimes the fastest don't always win the race. Food doesn't always come to the wise. So sometimes it's the wise who might be hungry. That's interesting, because of all the statements that he's made up to this point, and still more to be made, about the benefit that can come from being wise, the benefit of wisdom, and still he's making the point that, sometimes the wise are hungry too. It's just life. There's just some things that happen. Wealth does not always come to the brilliant. Sometimes the brilliant are poor. Being brilliant doesn't mean that you'll be rich. This is just a way of life. Favor does not always come to the learned. But wait a minute, I thought it should be that way. I thought that the ones who know the most would find the greatest favor, and those who are brilliant are the ones who should be rich, and the ones who are wise, they should never be hungry. It doesn't always work that way. Because time and chance happen to them all. What does that mean? Time and chance happen to them all.
We're not in control.
Why do we have to keep being reminded of that? But that's exactly what Solomon is saying to us over and over again. That we don't have, you know, some people like to have their thumb on everything, in control, so to speak. And sometimes it's the brilliance. You think, I've got this all wrapped up. I've got this understood. I'll take care of this. But it doesn't work the way they think it work. You know, even in a work environment where the boss is someone who thinks that they've got this all worked out, this is the way it's going to happen. Sometimes others kind of sit back thinking, that ain't going to work. You know, that'll never work that way. But he thinks he's got it all worked out. In the bigger picture of life, let's understand we are not the one in control. God understands destiny. And even this world will come to an end without our consultation on when that shall be. Because God's in control.
People say sometimes when there's an untimely death, maybe a child or a car accident or something that seems just out of time. You know, the most wonderful family. Well, in fact, I mean, I can cite a case. We knew a very God-fearing family that was part of our homeschooling circles back many years ago. Well, they were on Mount Road back here, and a drunk driver ran into and killed all of them. A very, very terrible thing. People say, well, it was God needed them in heaven, or it was their time to go, or something like that. And I choose not to make statements like that, because that's almost accusing God of destroying a family. Mm-hmm. Whereas in reality, it was the drunk driver that destroyed the family. Mm-hmm. But it was a bad thing. These kinds of things happen all the time, of course. But I think that this idea of the time and chance happening to all men is it also relates to Calvinism in that there is a kind of randomness to things. Mm-hmm. God allows things to happen. Mm-hmm. He doesn't control everything like a puppet on the screen.
Just like sometimes the wise don't have food and the brilliant aren't always rich.
Right.
You know, it's time and chance. There are circumstances of life that sometimes just happen that sometimes people have said, can you explain to me why that happened? And the best I can come up with is, no, I really can't. I don't know how to explain that. You know, but what Solomon has said to us over and over again, and what he's proven to us, is that God is in control. He understands it. This is what God has put in place. If you go stand on the railroad track when there's a train coming, you're going to die. Did God cause you to do that? No, but he put the physics in place that is going to demand that happens. One of the, this may not make a minute's worth of sense to anybody. I'm not sure it does to me, but I've tried to understand this. You know, it's been a lot of years in the fire department. You know, you see just a little bit of everything. Even in a rural community, you know, kind of thing. You don't see a lot of it like you do in a big city, but over time you kind of see it all. I mean, you see innocent people in a car accident. Just minding their business, they're just driving to work, or they're driving to school, or something like that. Or there are five boys who left school, and 5 minutes later, three of them are dead laying on the road. Why does that happen? I mean, I can't just pull that together sometimes. Time and chance happen to them all. Doesn't matter if you're good or if you're bad. If you go off the road and hit a tree, there's a good chance you're going to die. The tree's not going to move. It just doesn't. And it's like the question is asked sometimes, why does bad things happen to good people? Does God wish bad things happen to good people? I can't find anything that makes me draw a conclusion that God wants bad things to happen to good people. But sometimes if good people do something that puts their life in jeopardy, we might die. If we drive too fast and go off the road and hit a tree, we might die. On the other side of it, and this is just always bizarre to me, somebody drinks and is drunk and they get behind the wheel and they crash into a car and an innocent person dies and they get out of their car and walk away or stagger away. That's not fair. And really, indeed, it's not fair. But it happens. I've seen it. That's hard to figure out. But there are such circumstances. There are such that the laws of nature that God has put in place allow some very peculiar things to happen sometimes. But God's put those things in place.
Job is a good place to go and see this. We couldn't possibly, and Job didn't understand what went wrong.
Yeah.
But it's because God had enough faith in Job to prove to the devil that you can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of these things might happen to one of us because God says he can handle it.
And are we willing to overcome difficult circumstances in life without blaming God for bad things that happen? Because, in fact, bad things sometimes happen to good people. I mean, that's just a fact. We get into verse 12. I think that's part of what he's dealing with there. Rick?
Well, this is kind of maybe going beyond the topic farther than you want to go, but I think the only comfort we can ultimately have is that God is in control.
Yeah.
And he sees the big picture. He knows what he's doing. And no matter what happens in our lives, we have to trust that that is the case.
Isn't that what Solomon started to understand? I mean, I think that's part of this, where he has done and tried everything, and he cannot understand how some things work this way, why did it happen this way. Now he's at that point of realizing, I don't know it all. There are some things, I mean, I still have my wisdom about it, but there are some things I cannot understand. But God knows. I mean, I wish we would all come to that point of understanding. There's just some things we can't understand. The secret things are of God, Moses wrote in Deuteronomy 29. There's some things we can't understand. That doesn't mean God's not in control. Just because we can't understand it, in fact, it actually proves the point that God is in control. And we are not.
Yeah. Once death came into the world through sin, it's here, and it's here to stay, and it's a curse to fall in the world, and since death is here, it doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it.
Right. Death does not discriminate. You are right. It's the young and the old. In our way of thinking, from a human perspective, when somebody who has lived a long life dies, we can rationalize that. We can understand that. When someone young dies, we have a hard time with that now. Somehow that hits us different. And yet it is the same factors, the same laws of nature, so to speak, that God has put in place that would cause the young to die, that would cause the old to die. He's still in control of those elements. Look at verse 12. It's the same thought here, continuing verse 12. Moreover, no man knows when his hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net, or birds are taken in a snare, so men are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. Tragedy comes. Why do bad things happen to good people? Because tragedy befalls the good and the bad. It does. A family goes to bed at night, they say goodnight to each other and give each other a hug and a kiss, and they go to bed never to wake up again. And their house is consumed in fire one night, and they never know what happened. How can that be? As fish are caught in a cruel net, or birds taking us.
It's the same thing. You know, the fish aren't thinking, I see a net over there. If I go into that net, it'll get me caught in there, and I'll die if I... No, we don't think that way. I mean, if a bird says, you know, when we were down at the Gulf here a few weeks ago, there were some bird people there, and they had these great big nets. I've never seen this before. It is great big nets, hundreds of feet worth of nets, out there near the coast. And they were catching birds and tagging them. Okay, it was interesting once to see. I'm not a bird watcher. I'm glad I got to see that, because I never, how do you catch birds like that? Well, you put a huge net up that goes hundreds of feet, and birds fly into it. You know, and they pull it off and they put these tags on them. That's kind of interesting to see, you know. I mean, since birds aren't saying, hey, there's a net, and if I fly into that thing, I'll get stuck. I mean, it's just like we don't get in a car thinking, I'm going to go too fast around this corner. There's a big tree that won't move, and if I hit that, I'll die. We don't think that way. Not reasonable thinking, we don't think that way. Time and chance happen to them all. Tragedy comes to those even who are unaware, those who are just driving to work in the morning, and something goes wrong. And they're in a crash and they die. That morning was no different than every other morning. The time and chance.
Well, Jesus addressed this same thing when his disciples asked him about a current event, apparently. The Tower of Siloam fell, and I believe it was 12 people were killed in that. So that was like a news item of the day.
Yeah.
And their reasoning was, were these men sinners above all that were in Israel? That must be why
they died.
The tower fell.
Right.
Because those men that were in the tower had to be the worst possible people on earth.
This wouldn't have happened to them if they'd been good people.
Right. And what did Jesus say? Mm-hmm. He said, beware, and the same thing will befall you except to repent. You worry about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, what he said is, no, that's not really the truth of the matter. They weren't sinners above all in Israel, but except you repent, you shall likewise perish.
To be ready, because we don't know when that's going to happen. We don't know when the tower is going to fall. We don't know when we're going to get caught in the net. We don't know when we're going to get tripped up in the snare. We don't know when we're going to die. But if we repent, if we are living right and walking for the Lord, it doesn't matter when it happens. We're ready. Seems like that's the idea that goes along with that. Other thoughts or comments on that?
Well, we keep talking about death, and I lost both my parents to cancer, but I don't think it has the evil time staring us. It's just death. It's your reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to, and everybody mourns and gets angry and different things. But you can either later on in your life blame God and not be faithful, or you can say, you know what, God, I still don't understand, but I'm going to trust you. And I think when that happens, Satan's sitting there waiting. That's the snare for us. Mm-hmm. Are you going to crumble?
That's a good point. Sometimes we are not the ones, but obviously we're not always the one that dies. Somebody else dies, but it affects us, you know, greatly when that happens. How are we going to react to that? How are we going to live with that? So the verses 13 through 16 are there now. I also saw under the sun this example of wisdom that greatly impressed me. There was once a small city with only a few people in it. And a powerful king came against it, surrounded it, and built huge siege works against it. Now there lived in that city a man poor but wise, and he saved the city by his wisdom. But nobody remembered that poor man. And so I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words no longer heeded. Two or three things that kind of stand out to me in that passage. One's in the first statement that Solomon makes here, you know. There's an example of wisdom that greatly impressed me. I just had the impression that Solomon was not easily impressed, especially by somebody else's wisdom. Others were impressed by his wisdom and would come hundreds of miles to sit at his feet and to ask questions of him. And yet here he recites something that he has seen that just really impressed him. How would you explain what Solomon saw and his conclusions here? What do you see in that text that just stands out to you? What do you see? Can you picture this small city? It's a walled city. And this king comes against it. This king who's coming in just to claim the territory. It's kind of peculiar to me that he builds a huge siege works up against the wall. He's going to surround the city and starve people to the point they can tear down the wall and go in. Or if he tried knocking on the door first saying, you know, I'm going to destroy your city unless you let me in. I'm going to make you starve to death. You know, because it seems as though there was someone inside who was willing to say, can we talk about this? Now, what do you see here?
That's right. But the award that should have gone to a particular person may not have.
That's right. That's right.
I can cite some personal examples along those lines.
Yeah, it just works that way sometimes. Life ain't fair. We've said it before, haven't we? Life's not always fair.
Right, Jim? Yeah.
I guess I'd say, I think, and maybe beyond that, Solomon's giving you this comfort that he's speaking on behalf of these kinds of people and all of us to let us know that, this is how it is.
Yeah.
Kind of like abortion people speaking on behalf of the unborn. But
yeah.
In this life, he's explaining things that are depressing in a way. But he's also speaking from a secular standpoint, too. This wise man probably doesn't want fame. He might have wanted recognition for it, but he may not have.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon thinks he should have had fame. He should have been recognized.
Why didn't he get any credit, perhaps, from what the text says? What is said about him?
He was a nobody.
He wasn't anybody. And on top of it all, he was poor. You know, I mean, what if the king had negotiated, the king of that city had negotiated with the king on the outside and said he was fair? What if he would have got credit? Probably, yeah. You give the king credit, yeah. In the text going forward, it seems like there's another point or two made sometimes about the poor not being recognized in some way. And another point to me here, it's not always the rich who are wise. It's not always those who are in places of position or power who are always the wise ones. It's interesting to me that in this little city there must have been a governor or a mayor or a king or someone. Why didn't he work this out? You know, but there was this poor man that was able to sort this thing out, who was wise. It also says something to the fact that those who are the leaders aren't always wise. We've probably figured that part out already. And we can see that happen sometimes too.
But we do have a tendency to believe that the poor man isn't very smart.
Yeah. And it's just not always true. There are some things in the next chapter we see where sometimes it indicates sometimes those who have some wealth are that way because they've been wise about what they do. Sometimes the poor are poor because they've not been wise. But that's not always the case, is it?
In 2 Samuel chapter 20, we have an example of of something very similar to this happening.
What was that?
With when Joab was pursuing Sheba, the son of Bichri.
Okay.
And the, let's see, let me just read a section of that. Verse 15, starting in verse 15, and they came and besieged him in Abel of Beth-Maacah, and they cast up a mound against the city, and it stood against the rampart, and all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. Then cried a wise woman out of the city, "Hear, hear, I say, I pray you unto Joab, come near hither that I may speak with thee." And he came near unto her, and the woman said, "Art thou Joab?" And he answered, "I am." Then she said unto him, "Hear the words of thy handmaid." And he answered, "I do hear." Then she spake, saying, "They were wont to speak in old time, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel." And so they ended the matter. "I am of them that are peaceful and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of Jehovah?" And Joab answered and said, Far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of the hill country of Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bichri by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city." And the woman said unto Joab, "Behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall." Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba the son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. And he blew the trumpet, and they were dispersed from the city, every man to his tent. And Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king.
And the city was spared. A wise woman this time made some wise choices and decisions. There was another hand, too.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking of what Paul says about the wise of this world and their attitude toward the gospel.
Right.
And it's, you know, kind of a spiritual parallel to what we're seeing here. Yeah. You know, the intellectual snobbery looks down upon those who would be backwards and actually believe in the Bible. And
yeah.
And such as that. Ignorant fools.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. Interesting passage. I really kind of like that right there. Helps to put some things in perspective, perhaps a little bit for us on some things. Any other thoughts or comments here on chapter 9? Oh, we still got a couple verses to go. Let's look at 17 and 18. "The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of the ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good." We're back to this proverb type of statements here again. You can kind of take, you know, make three or four different statements from this right here. Quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded. What is that kind of picture does that conjure up in your mind? Quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded. What do you think about it?
Well, it seems to be the contrast between, if I were to put it in a like a person in private as opposed to an official, said, "I may know and do know." In fact, everybody in this room, for example, I would trust the wisdom that comes out of their mouth because I know that they know the Lord more than most of the officials in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that they would make wiser decisions than most of the decisions made in Washington.
From some who have been sort of like this, the shouts of a ruler of fools. You know, sometimes the one who is most quiet is sometimes the wisest. I mean, sometimes the wisest isn't the one that stands up in front of everybody saying, "Listen to me, listen to me, listen to me." But maybe the one who kind of sits back with his arms folded thinking, "This is not the way to go." Or, "They've not considered this." Or, "What about this idea over here?" And sometimes we need to stop and think about the one who doesn't have as much, who isn't always the first one to say, "I have an idea here." The wisest may be the one who's the more quiet. We need to pay attention and listen to that.
and as well, it seems like there's a contrast being made here, that of, you know, wisdom and fools. You know, there's value in wisdom. Solomon has made that point time and again, you know, in different ways, and still will when we go forward. Wisdom is better than weapons of war. Diplomacy, there's something to be said about diplomacy and trying to avoid war, like the wise poor man in the city who was able to help spare the city from being at war, so to speak, or being taken over. Diplomacy goes a long way, but one sinner destroys much good. Isn't it amazing sometimes how one person's selfishness can destroy a lot of good? I mean, that can really, we've seen that, I'm sure. You know, that can happen. Other thoughts, concluding remarks on chapter 9, the things that you see in chapter 9. Anything else we need to really kind of spend some time with or talk about there? Yes?
Well, I've often thought about that as far as Solomon tried to teach us so much as far as to relate it to our lives. I always think the poor wise man might be the Christian today. And as far as the great snares would be the devil and all the world around us. Mm-hmm. And then as far as the wise, the words of the wise, is Jesus talking to
us. Sure, sure. You can make some good application that way. You really can. You know, and we can see that. Sure enough. Another comment?
Joe, I struggle with this about the legs.
Yeah. And time and again, Solomon has been making the point, as we've talked about, that ultimately God is in control. And we see, when we read through the Bible story, we see time and again where through prayer, God has intervened. We're proving once again that ultimately it's God who is in control. God's mind has been changed at times by the prayers of the faithful. We've seen that when we read through the Old Testament in particular, we can see that over and over again. And we can't let up on that power of prayer for many circumstances.
It's frightening,
you know, sometimes. Well, sure. Yeah. That's right. Other thoughts? I've never had that thought.
There were times in the Old Testament that God had made his mind up about something. And,
absolutely.
And Moses changed God's mind.
That's right. His mind was made up. He was going to destroy the people, you know. And yet there was intercession that was made. There was prayer that was made. And God would spare the people. God is in control. It's interesting to me that, I want to say that Solomon has always understood that God was in control. It seems to me as Father David understood that. There are so many events in his life where that was demonstrated in powerful ways, in ways that we would think of as being positive, times where God spared the life of David when it seemed as though he was doomed. On the other side, we can see God was in control even in the death of his son. God said, here's what's going to happen. You know, because of your sin, this is the consequences. And it happened just as he said. Again, we see God in control. You would think that Solomon has always understood that point, that God was in control. But we didn't see that so much in the earlier chapters of Ecclesiastes as he was testing and trying and experimenting in all these different ways. And he's telling us, he's relating to us all these different ways that he has experimented and gained wisdom and things like that. But now in more of the conclusion of the matter, the idea is made, and the point is made over and again, ultimately it's God who is in control. It's not the wise, it's not the rich, it's not the kings, but that God is in control. Sometimes I still think we miss that.
I think that we have to recognize that wisdom is something that grows. He was given. as he's getting older and how he's thinking more about death, he's getting closer to that deadline, and his wisdom is also growing as he matures.
That's right.
And so, as a young man, he probably wasn't as wise as what he...
As he got older.
As he got older.
And gained experience.
And found out that, oh, yeah, some of this makes sense now.
Yeah.
But some of it doesn't yet.
And, and that's right. Again, the idea that some things we're not going to understand. Time and chance happen to them all. Is that right? Is that fair? We can't explain that, but God is in control. All right. Good thoughts tonight. Appreciate your comments. I think we're going to stop right there. We're ready to go into chapter 10, Lord willing, on Sunday. That's where we'll go. We'll go right into chapter 10. I think that's going to, chapter 10 is going to be a real interesting chapter as well. I really enjoyed chapter 9. Because now, I mean, we're making applications now. I do better with that. I like that. And we'll continue to do that as we get into chapter 10. Thank you for your comments.